Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 447 for comics originally released on March 2nd, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC is Green Lantern number 50. This is written by Robert Venditti and, we've got, who do we have? We've got Billy Chan and Vincent Cifuentes on the art. Have you been reading Green Lantern lately?
No, not lately. Still the same creator the last time I sampled it, though.
Did you read Green Lantern back around the Parallax era way back when?
No, I missed that thing.
Okay. Did this issue make any sense to you?
Yeah, I get it. He's kind of a bad Green Lantern.
Well, basically in the Flashpoint continuity, at one point basically Hal went nuts and defeated, you know, the entire Green Lantern Corps and whatnot. It was around the Death of Superman time frame. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he mentions it there, but he doesn't give his motivations as to why and all that, but he does mention exactly why he's so much more powerful and how much more powerful he is than everyone else.
Mm-hmm. This was one that, you know, frankly, I wasn't sure we needed a showdown between the current Hal Jordan and Parallax. But hey, that's what they were going to do, and they've been teasing it for a little bit. And really, I think this kind of comes out of the Convergence stuff, which is how we get this Parallax at this time frame. And I'll give them credit. The issue lived up to its solicitation, a battle neither Jordan can win, and one that will change both forever. It pretty much lived up to that, I think. You know, in my mind, this is one that really it seemed to serve the purpose of just bringing Parallax to center stage, establishing as a major bad guy for Hal. And knowing what we know just through the solicits, it really wouldn't surprise me much if both these Hal Jordans, the current and the Parallax version, wind up maybe merging or something during Rebirth, giving us kind of a new and improved Hal Jordan of some sort. It just, that seems like a possible road they may go down. They may not. They may go a completely different way. But I just can't think of any other major reason to bring Parallax back, kind of establish him as a major villain this close to Rebirth, unless you're going to do that. You know, it was one of those things that we needed the opening scenes where we get the two views of Coast City. Don't know that we needed about 8 pages of that. You know, we needed the time spending time with the family and all of that. Don't know that we needed 6 pages of that. I mean, we're 14 pages in before things really start heating up.
I think that some of the best writing and was really the interaction with the family members, though. I really liked that. he did take a while to kind of examine, you know, what he's lost and all that. And that took a little longer than it should. But I thought the stuff with the kid's birthday and the drone stuff in the park, I thought that was fun. And I really liked that interaction.
I think it was needed. And I just guess that 14 pages into the story, waiting for things to really start moving, and maybe if they had just condensed the Coast City stuff, I would have had a little bit more patience for the family time.
Yeah, and then you wouldn't have had to charge $5 for the extra pages.
There is that.
Yeah.
I was expecting a little bit more out of this, given it's issue 50, it's a little bit higher price point. I'll admit, I was a little disappointed with kind of a to-be-continued aspect to the ending of this. I mean, this was a good issue, not a great issue, and I think part of it's just my current cynicism towards some of what's going on at DC these days with their titles. This just seems like, again, potentially a transparent move to go to a more back-to-basics kind of approach with Hal. It's very shock and awe, sort of, you know, grandstanding or whatever at times versus just some really solid storytelling. Although there's signs of that here too, again, like you point out with the family. Seeing a character battle himself is not really what I'm looking for out of my superhero comics. Again, I'm old fashioned. I like to see the superheroes fight crime.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I mean, although the art was solid, there were apparitions from the ring that were kind of in groups and fighting each other. And it was tough to distinguish them from each other and what they were supposed to be and how detailed they were. It was just it really blended together and was not as crisp, I guess, as you would hope, because it was kind of a lighter, the next level down of a lighter green.
Can you give an example of that?
I can't give you a page. It was there. It's during the battle, and Parallax has just thrown him into a bus, the side of a bus, probably around 30 pages in.
Okay.
And then you see some fish type apparitions, maybe an octopus. And then on the next couple of pages, it's like a lighter yellow. It's almost like a yellow coloring.
I'm there now. The panel really, right below the bus is kind of busy.
And as you continue on, you kind of see how they all, I'm really not sure where one thing ends and the other begins. Like maybe they're just trying to say that he's throwing like half the ocean at him or something. But it had some problems. I had trouble telling exactly what they were going for there.
Well, it's possible with the color that they were going for how he was a bit powered by fear at that point, because he's got the, I'm trying to remember what was going on with Parallax back at the time. I think Parallax wound up being the name of the yellow entity that powers the Sinestro Corps or some such.
Okay.
But don't quote me on that. I could be wrong.
Makes sense.
But yeah, there's definitely a difference in color there, but they kind of had to do that because otherwise it does all blur together.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling if we saw the pencils for this, things might have been a bit clearer, but we didn't see the pencils. We saw the finished page. So that's a fair comment. For me, the place where the art got a little, not out there, but just a little not to my liking, was when we see Parallax with, like, the shark teeth or whatever.
Yeah, he got really, really frightening, and I thought that was interesting because he didn't look like that when he was around his family, but he kind of evolved or devolved as the issue went on.
Well, he was that way almost as soon as they started fighting. If you go to the splash page where he's talking about how powerful he is, he's got it there, and even, I think, earlier. But again, it goes back to, this is, I think, accurate for that era of Hal Jordan. But this
during the fight. I was just, I thought it was interesting that there really was no hint of that during the initial relationship with the family.
Yeah, we don't really get a clear shot of his. I guess we get a little shot of the teeth or whatever when the current Hal, you know, slams him with a hammer or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that the moment, there were moments in here that were good. There were some that were not so great. There was a definite opportunity here for some footnotes to really reestablish the point in time this Parallax came from, how he got here, all that kind of a thing. Somebody coming at this cold could be rather confused. Somebody who's even been reading for a little bit but skipped over either Convergence or the start of the New 52 or some of that could be a little confused. And this also really underscores how they're treating the pre-Flashpoint as if it's a separate universe versus a re-juggling or remashing or whatever you want to call it of a single timeline. Coming out of a Flashpoint, the lines seemed to be indicating that this had replaced the previous continuity, literally, in the same universe. Not that it was a parallel universe to it. I mean, on the one hand, it doesn't really matter that much, but they didn't pull out all the stops here. This wasn't the wow, this is the start of another, you know, great era of Green Lantern and such. But again, we're what, 2-3 months away from Rebirth, so.
So yeah, that's the problem. It's I felt it was accessible enough for me, but what it was accessible to was nothing special and nothing that great. And the thing that I'm feeling is a lot of, and it might be that I've already kind of checked out of DC because I know what's coming on the horizon, and I'm like, well, if these things aren't fives out of fives or A+ reads, why am I bothering? Because none of this matters in a couple of months. And I don't know if I think I'm bringing this baggage with me, because I mean, this was okay, but it wasn't something that, you know, says I better read that next issue.
No, I agree with you on the assessment of quality. It's okay at best, but I don't know that they're throwing the baby out with the bathwater with Rebirth like they did with the New 52. But this was the same sort of a thing that happened leading up to the New 52 and Flashpoint, with they seem to be rebooting, so who cares what's going on now?
And sales plummeted, didn't they? They were pretty bad leading up to...
Apathy started. That's the bigger problem. Regardless of how the sales do, it's just they had lame duck titles at that point. I don't think they're at that point now, because I'm not getting the sense they're going to reboot the continuity, but I could be wildly mistaken on that.
Well, I mean, anecdotally, I'm talking to LCS managers and stuff and about their expectations, and, you know, is it going to be a New 52 bump? Their feeling is no, that there's not going to be new readers coming in. They also don't feel like they're going to lose a lot of readers, that it's going to be flat. So if they have 15 pull lists for Green Lantern, they expect that there'll be 15 pull listers on Green Lantern number one, and they don't expect a drop off with Rebirth. They're not going to change their new release wall orders accordingly. It's going to be, you know, whatever they were doing before. They're not going to make any kind of uptick because of it. So I found that interesting, but it's not scientific, and it's just the shop owners that I've talked to.
Well, and I would be surprised if Rebirth has anywhere near the effect that the New 52 had, or even 1 year later. What I would anticipate is there's going to be, you know, we re-enter the honeymoon period on every title at DC that relaunches, and we see some interest on maybe the number ones, we see some major drops, but then in short order, yeah, we're back to pretty much where we are. I think there are going to be a few titles that would be hard to predict the sales of, Super Sons, Superwoman, that sort of a thing. And really, we know so little about these new titles, like who the creators are going to be. It's almost premature to speculate. But I hope that this is a smaller rock to drop in the pond, and you don't get as big of a ripples, because I don't know that DC could really withstand that right now, to be honest. So yeah. For me, overall, I kind of liked it. I'm a Green Lantern fan, though, and I remember, you know, that era with Parallax and all of that. So for me, it was a B-. It's certainly not something I would say people have got to go check out, but it was not as tight of a storytelling as I would have liked, but it was a decent story. It was good.
Yeah, I'm half a tick below you there at a C+. It was above average, but $5 book, and nothing special, nothing to hook a reader and make them want to read that next issue.
Yeah, and again, that price tag does kind of, you know, not work in its favor. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Black Widow number one. It's written by Chris Samnee and Mark Waid, or is it Mark Waid and Chris Samnee? I want to make sure I get the order on that right. You know, obviously we get Chris Samnee on the art. This thing is just really fun, kind of a roller coaster ride comic, I think would be the way to put it.
And if I told you that the main character will utter two words in the first issue launch title for her book, would you say it's probably not a very good issue? Would you think would you think that maybe it would need a little more dialogue in it? I was very surprised.
I was surprised by that, but that wasn't the thing that really stuck out in my mind.
No, I still think it was very solid.
When I opened the first opened the thing, got to the first page, I'm looking around. We've got what looks like an office environment. Everybody's in these rolling office chairs, pretty standard fare. We get a PA system saying, you know, Black Widow's now an enemy of S.H.I.E.L.D. from Director Hill. I'm like, okay, S.H.I.E.L.D., office environment. Is this a helicarrier? Clearly it can't be. Who would use a rolling desk chair on a helicarrier? That just seems like a bad idea. They bank a little and suddenly you go, you know, careening down the hallway or something. But then the further this went, where it's like, okay, we've actually got some people in S.H.I.E.L.D. uniforms or whatever, the more convinced I got that they were trying to convince me it was a regular office environment, not a helicarrier. So almost the more convinced I became it was a helicarrier. Up until we get what I thought was a really cool page with her kind of, you know, jumping out of an exploding window sort of a thing.
But before that, what kind of really solidified this, that I thought I was gonna like this book, was as she's being manhandled by this big SHIELD agent.
Mm-hmm.
You see a subtle moment where she's got a little explosive ball in her hand and gives it a gentle flick while she has a gun on her, and it's just the way that it's cartooned is just perfect. It's subtle, and the action continues, and you know something's coming. You know she's got a way out of this. And I thought, this is the difference, the level of execution between Samnee and whoever was doing the Green Lantern book before this. There's something. This art is pulling me in to this action in a way that is more part of the story than any of the words on the page. It's just fantastic.
How about the top of the page where she, you know, headbutts that big gorilla that's holding her, and he's like, "Is that all you got?" And she does it again and breaks his nose. You know, there's aspects of this that work because Samnee is both the lead writer and the artist. You know, I think having a writer script this out and hand this sort of issue to an artist would be tough, because the entire thing is action. It's one of the comics, again, like you said, the art's really working with the story more so than, say, like in that Green Lantern book we just talked about. But there are also a few places where it also showed that Samnee is a little bit more of a rookie writer or whatever, because there were certain things that felt a little kind of telegraphed. Again, the is this a helicarrier or not, for me, was a question I had through the entire thing, thinking, well, it's just an office thing, until I flipped to the two-page opening credits, and oh, guess what? It is a helicarrier. I was right.
That worked for me. I liked it.
Well, it was funny. It worked for me, and at about this point, I'm thinking, wow, this is a really fun opening action sequence. You know, sure, clearly intended to mislead us to where it's taking place and amaze us with the Widow's, you know, spy action adventure abilities or whatever, but it was well done. It was entertaining. But then it kept going, and the rest of the issue continued this action sequence, going from kind of a James Bond kind of opening, but then you get into the movie, to just, nope, we're staying with the action. Now, again, having the artist as the writer allows this to work fairly fluidly, because the artist fully understands what the writer wants out of the action sequence. And it was probably one of the best sustained action sequences I think we've gotten in comics in a while. I'll admit I had a couple of questions here and there. I mean, I love the scene where one of the agents gets in the car, floors it, and, you know, we've got the car flying out of the back of the helicarrier. Of course, it's one of the SHIELD, you know, flying cars. I mean, classic SHIELD stuff here.
And that was another point where the art was just masterful, because she flipped over and deftly just hits that switch, that ejection switch on the car. And I thought, oh, just like with her foot, I think she just taps it. And I really thought, I said, that was really subtle, brilliant way to show that. That was great. I really liked the interaction where she grabs onto the guy with the jetpack.
Oh, okay, hang on. I want to ask.
It was brilliant, too.
A couple of questions. By and large, I agree with you. I really enjoyed those sequences. I think when she's tapping the eject button, the panel before, when she's first getting to the car, if they'd had another kind of ghosted silhouette of her kind of flipping over such that her foot could somehow have gotten past the windshield, that might have helped a little there. I mean, it was cool looking, but I question the physics of it. And I will admit to being completely puzzled how she gets the jetpack off the guy. I love the scene. It's fun. But he seemed to be between her and the jetpack.
I was just planning for whenever Scarlett Johansson gets her solo movie. This is the cold open for this. This is the open.
Absolutely.
This is how the movie opens, and it felt cinematic. And I thought, this is exactly how they're going to do it. You don't have to. She doesn't have to say anything. You just show it nonstop action. She lands, and at the end of the sequence, she says "Me too," and then we go into the credits. And probably flashback to 6 months before.
I hope that's not the case.
I got a feeling that's where we're going to go. But it's still, I just thought it was really well done. I mean, I thought Matthew Wilson on collars. I loved his collars work on here. The creative team together were really cohesive, and they executed well in an almost you know, could have been a silent issue. Not a lot of dialogue in here, but I thought the action sequences were really rewarding.
Absolutely. I think the action sequence was obviously the highlight of this, but it also really shows aspects of the characterization. There's some acting during some of this, like when she's about to get the jetpack at the top of the page, when the guy's like, well, what was your plan now? You're still in free fall. She's like, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about that. And plays the guy. You know, this, again, cinematic, great. I agree with you. It'd make a great opening for a Black Widow movie. The fact they don't seem to have one on the plans just does not make sense to me.
Can't remember who was on the last volume of Black Widow, but
I'm thinking Phil Noto on art.
It
was good art.
It was good, but it didn't grab me, engage me with the character enough to say, yeah, I want to keep reading this.
And it certainly didn't have this level of blockbuster action movie kind of stuff.
No.
You know, it's one that I thought was a lot of fun. It was a good roller coaster ride. Really, it was all a sustained action sequence for the entire issue, yet it kept my attention the entire time. And it took long enough to read that I didn't feel it was just over in a blast. You know, I don't have a solid clue what the series is going to be about, other than Widow has kind of gotten on the wrong side of S.H.I.E.L.D., and that's not so good for her. I was expecting a bit more plot for the $3.99 price tag, but I was sufficiently entertained that I thought it was a really good read, and I'm coming back for more. I think the title has a lot of promise, but they need to also start really putting in some meat to the story.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'll be as happy if issue 2 only gives me a couple words of dialogue from my main character. I'm hoping there'll be a little more meat on the bone, I guess. But I think as an introduction to who she is, how tough she is obviously head and shoulders above any S.H.I.E.L.D. agent they can throw at her.
Oh, absolutely.
And they established that very well, and that she's that when situations are down, she can get out of it. And you know, I just love the way they executed this plan. And I was a little cautious because it felt like it was, you know, Mark Waid was going to hold Chris Samney's hand because he wanted to write his own book, and I was worried that it might not work. There's a spotty track record with artists doing writing as well, and so I was pleasantly surprised at how well this got off the bat. And it felt a little like the Daredevil issues, and that's good. That's a good thing, because they had a great run on that. So I love this, and I would hand this to someone. I would recommend this to someone. So I gave it an A-.
Interesting. I can totally see that. For me, what keeps it from that A- is, again, the lack of sufficient plot. I had fun here, but it was, I don't say a mindless action sequence, because it was more than that. But I don't know, is she framed? Is she really done something against Teal? I mean, I don't know who the players are other than Maria Hill and Black Widow and such, and unnamed S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. I really did like this. I think this shows a lot of promise. What I would like to see them do potentially with this book is get into a cadence kind of like the Sword did over at Image with the Luna Brothers, where you had one issue that pretty much pretty heavy backstory plot and exposition or whatever. It was the writer kind of issue, if you will, followed by an incredibly good issue with a lot of action, adventure, you know, this sort of issue. You know, so if they start with this, and the next time we get a bit more plot and what's going on, followed by, you know, a cliffhanger that leads into an issue-long great action sequence, and then kind of get into that kind of a cadence, this could really work. There are other cadences they could do that would also work well, but we need to have a bit more story to motivate us to read this. Otherwise, it comes across as, it was really fun, but what's the point of it? So for me, I'm going with a B+. This is one where I think the series could wind up just elevating really high, depending how the first arc kind of plays out overall.
Yeah, I'm hoping it continues at this level. I think this is a very strong title.
I think they were smart to keep the entire team together. It looks like Samney's doing most of the plotting and such, but Waid is probably one of the best collaborators I think an artist could work with in this sort of situation. because not only is Wade just an amazingly talented writer, he's been a very talented editor and seems to really know how to play well with others in this sort of sense. So I'm looking forward to more of the book.
Oh, yeah.
Shall we move over to our other book of the week?
Mm-hmm.
This is The Fuse, number 18, from Image. It is by Anthony Johnson and Justin Greenwood. They've been the creative team on the book since it started. This is the end of the third arc, right? I think that's
yes.
Right.
Yep, third arc.
It's the Perihelion, I may have mispronounced that, whatever, storyline. And basically, this is the day of the year where Earth's orbit brings the Earth and the Fuse station closest to the sun. And it's been kind of dubbed the day of chaos on the station because everybody kind of goes a little crazy or whatever. And this is the end of that day that we've been following the entire time. And this is really, it's a standard police procedural kind of television show sort of a storyline set on a space station. The closest thing I can think of that's been on television would be if Babylon 5 had focused on Garibaldi and the security crew on the station versus everything else it did focus on. That would be kind of the closest analog I can find to this.
I've not ever seen that show, so.
Oh, man, you missed some great stuff. Basically, again, big space station. They had similar, you know, below decks and alien. They had more aliens. These are all humans, whatever.
It's Murder, She Wrote on a space station.
Yeah, but I think there's a little bit more to it than that. But that's, again, it's a standard.
Don't you disparage Jessica Fletcher now.
I was not. I think they're building up a definite kind of status quo lifestyle and environment here that I think is kind of cool. They've got the advantage of sci-fi, but they're really leaning heavily on just the standard police procedural kind of tropes or whatever, mm-hmm. and they do it well.
Yeah, it was interesting. My history with this title is I sampled that first issue and then read the first arc in trade
mm-hmm.
and loved it. I mean, I just loved it. And then I went to single issues for the second and third arc. And I'll say I don't think the quality went down, but I think my enjoyment dropped because that the trade experience with this title, it's a full case.
Yeah,
you can put the pieces together. You can connect some of it, or you at least know all the players in your mind well enough. There is no distance between what happened early on in the case and what happened later in the case. And I jumped off the trade because I enjoyed it so much. I didn't want to wait, but I think I really think I need to go back to trade waiting on this book because it. It was so much of a better experience getting that entire case in one chunk. I mean, you could still buy the floppies and you don't have to wait for the trade itself, but I just feel like there's definitely a difference in reading this in trade and reading this in single issues.
I agree with that entirely. And I don't mean that in any sort of a bad way. I think this uses the space per issue well, but it's definitely written for the trade in a fairly fulfilling way. There was one or two places here. There was an acronym used early on, FGU, on page 4 that I know they defined earlier in this arc, but I don't remember what it stands for.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'd read it in trade, oh, yeah, okay, got it. This is like the final between the commercial breaks act of a television episode. And again, in a good way, it's a meaty issue. There's a lot going on here, but it's payoff on the last 5 issues.
And it's great payoff, and it's well-constructed murder mystery, and there's a couple of cases. There's some A plots and B plots going on here, and I think they were really well finished, and it really stuck the landing on these, but there was so much time that had passed for me as a reader that it wasn't as enjoyable as I think it should have been. It's something else that they did earlier on was they had some additional back matter in some of those early single issues with some one pagers. Do you remember those?
Yeah, I do.
And those, they've kind of abandoned that. And those were, they were not, there wasn't a lot of story there, but they were fun. And it was just a little glimpse of some other aspect of what was going on the Fuse and some other. Maybe I think it was a reporter that it was focused on,
yeah.
If I recall. And that was fun, and it really added to the single issue experience. And that's gone now. So that's, I mean, that's really another reason why I think this lends itself so much better to a trade read, just because of the fact that the arcs are full cases and there's no reason to read them in single issues.
I think the reason to read them in single issues is so it continues, but that's not our problem.
I know.
But I agree, it reads better in trade, and in this case, I think in a very good way, because it's telling a fairly big story.
Yeah.
You know, for a 20-page comic or however many pages this has. And I would like to see this, if it were adapted to live action, and frankly, I think it should be. I think it'd be great. The closest, the best format I could see for that would be like a BBC series, because I'm not sure how long one of these cases would play out, but we're talking, I'm going to say roughly about 2 hours of televised content.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like the Sherlock.
Exactly what BBC. I was thinking.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Do an hour and a half, 2 hour type episode, do three of them a season or whatever. And, you know, you'd be staying more or less at pace with the comic. And it's got the meat for it because these are involved stories. But it's that involved story aspect that makes them a bit more challenging to read. Mm. On an issue-to-issue basis, because it's like, I forget, you know, I read the first part of this, 5 months ago?
Yeah, yeah. And that's, it's not their fault. I mean, they come out on time.
Mm-hmm.
They take just the 1 month off for the trade and then start the next arc. And it's just that it's one case and it's, there's solid story beats throughout, but it's not, you lower the enjoyment level a little bit reading it in single issues, I think. I would say that these three cases very equal in enjoyment as a whole, but in single issue installments, it's a little less enjoyable.
I would agree entirely because it's a well-written mystery.
Yeah.
And to enjoy a well-written mystery, you've got to remember the clues that have been planted. It's hard to do that over a five-month period.
But the limitations of the industry that we're in is if you don't buy this as a single issue, you might not get the trade collected to enjoy that mystery.
Absolutely.
In one chunk.
That's a real shame.
So what do you do? What do you do?
The best choice is buy the issues, but stack them up and wait to read them until the arc is finished.
Exactly. And that's a tough recommendation to make, but it is the best one.
Well, at this point, anyone who hasn't read this, they've got two and soon to be a third trade to read through and see what they like, if it's for them or not. And I think if you want a good sci-fi drama, crime drama kind of a thing, this is the title for you.
And I don't believe they do the $9.99 intro trade.
I would be surprised if they did.
I think it's more $14.99.
To me, this is something that you price more along the lines of individual mystery novel installments, not... Mm-hmm. I mean, because, yes, there's continued story, the characters continue to evolve, live, etc., but you could read these almost in backwards order to a degree, and each individual case would be as enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, even though there's some intro stuff with our detectives meeting each other in that first arc, besides that, you're right, they're just two detectives working a case. One's old, one's young, there's... the stuff that goes along with that one that's more experienced than the other one. And one has more of a little mystery behind him than the other one does. So, although I like this issue, it finished up another case. Well, it was good. So I gave it a B, but I would give the first case as an arc. I'd give it an A. I would give the second case, the six issue arc, an A. This individual issue, probably when this is collected, I would give this an A, but the individual issue that closed this case is a B, if that makes any sense.
It does. For me, I'm actually going with an A minus on this one. I thought it was a really satisfying conclusion to the storyline. I really appreciate how much substance and meat there is to the story in any given issue. And I think the art really complements the story, and the two work well in unison. So, I mean, I'm very happy with the series. All of that having been said, I agree entirely with you that it reads much better in trade than in single issues, but that's not how I've been reading it. And there are middle chapters of some of their arcs where it's a little harder for me to get back into it because they're not setting stuff up, they're not wrapping stuff up. But I don't think they should change how they're telling the stories either. You know, I think they're doing some great work here. It's just the nature and size of the stories they're telling. The trade is the better format to read it in. And that's not a bad thing.
No, that's okay as long as they meet the minimum threshold to make it there.
Well, and yes. And again, I think continuing to publish the monthly comics is necessary. I don't think this could exist solely as original trades. It would go 6 months or whatever between installments. People would forget about it. You know, they're going down the right path, but it's hard to get back into the story because it's involved.
It's a lot like Resident Alien to me. And I kind of feel the same way about Resident Alien, that it's a better trade read, but maybe Resident Alien's a little stronger in four issues than this is in six, spread out over six.
I think any really good mystery story is going to read better in a trade, though.
Yeah.
And really, this and Resident Alien are about the only mystery stories I can really think of these days coming out that I'm getting.
That I'm reading, yeah. You might be right.
And speaking of everything I'm reading, I am still behind. I had hoped to catch up, but I had failed to anticipate both the numbers coming out and having to crunch that over the weekend, and I failed to anticipate the massive turnout we had on the preview spotlight. We had like 67 or 68 clips all said and done. The episode's coming up on Wednesday. It's about 2 hours. It was just a phenomenal turnout. I'm very pleased, very thankful for that. So thanks, everybody.
Usual suspects or some new faces or voices?
Both.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
You know, it's a nice mix. Always good to get some new voices. Always great to have returning people.
Well, I would have probably caught up if it hadn't have been for you and Kay's Librarians episode, which got me intrigued on that stinking series. So now there's another show on the pile that I'm watching, and it's really good.
I enjoy it a lot. It's a lot of fun. They've got a good cast. It's one of those, the basic premise almost feels like a watered down version of National Treasure or Indiana Jones or any of those things.
But in a fun, really fun way.
Yeah, it's fun. It's quirky. It's enjoyable. Yeah. So that's why we do those episodes, to eat up everybody else's time, the shows they should be watching.
I really enjoyed your solo Q&A show. I thought the questions were really cool, and you handled them really well, and it was really a captivating, hour and a half of responses that you put out there, and it really cements that you don't need a co-host. So I appreciate you allowing me to sit in with you. You really could do the show on your own.
It's funny you say that, because I was so tempted to start that episode with the first question from longtime listener John Mayo is, why don't you do solo episodes anymore? The answer is, we're about to find out. Doing a solo podcast is a real challenge, because you've got nobody to kind of throw it to as you're grasping for words, no counterpoint, whatever. I really enjoy having somebody to talk about comics with, or the numbers, or TV shows, whatever. The fact that there were just so many great questions, and it's like, well, I'm out of things to say on this, next question, is, I think, part of what made that episode, at least in my mind, kind of work. It was fun to do. I've gotten very positive feedback on it, so as questions build up periodically, I'll do another one. It just worked out such that my sister was not feeling well, so we weren't going to get the subscription box light up in time for that slot. So it's like, well, I've got a free slot. I've got a free evening. What the heck? And it took pretty much most of the evening to do it, actually, between the editing and whatnot. But it was fun to do. So I'm glad everyone seemed to enjoy it. And if you've got more questions and stuff, post them on the forum. And at some point, I'll do another one of them.
Tons of fun.
Yeah.
Well, I think, was it Jason that posted the first online solicitation already?
Yes.
Is it that time already?
Apparently.
So, yeah.
These online months are getting shorter.
They seem to be, and we had a leap day and everything, but the online solicitations are already starting to get posted for April's edition of the preview spotlight, which will probably be, what, April 5th, something like that?
Actually, what's going to happen, and I'm glad you mentioned it because I wanted to bring this up, the previews comes out on March 30th, so a week, you know, a half later, so 10 days later, whatever, 11 days later. On the 9th is when the clips are going to be due for the preview spotlight. But due to popular demand, we are bringing back the teleconference, at least for this month. We'll see how it goes. If it goes well, we'll keep doing it. But we're going to do that the week after, or the weekend after Previews comes out.
So again, the 2nd.
The 2nd. So okay. Previews comes out on the 30th. I'll be getting mine that Friday night, so I will not have had time probably to look at it before the teleconference. But it just, otherwise, it would overlap with when the numbers are probably going to come out, when the preview spotlight is done, and I don't have that kind of time. But I enjoy doing the teleconferences, so I'm glad people are interested in getting those going again. Basically, the way the teleconferences work, for anyone who has not been on one, we do it all through Skype. Skype is a free voice over IP program. It's an internet telephone, essentially. My handle is TheJohnMayo, so TheJohnMayo. We've got all this on the forum also. All you've got to do is, at some point prior to then, or right then when you get on, you need to add me as a contact. Skype will then say, hey, so-and-so is adding you as a contact. When you do that, mention the podcast, mention the teleconference. Because every once in a while, I just get this random, hey, someone wants to add you as a contact. I'm like, I have no idea who they are, so no thank you. So if you tell me who you are and whatnot, that I'll add you. But then on the 2nd, April 2nd, when we do the teleconference, all you've got to do is hop onto Skype, send me a chat message saying, hey, I'd like to get in on the call. I'll add you to the conference call, and we'll either start the discussion then or be continuing the discussion or whatever. Come when you want, leave when you want. It's just, it's a fun time.
Start roughly at 7:30?
7 p.m. Central, or that's when I'm committing to be sitting at my computer. Really, whenever somebody else chats me and we get going at that point. Sometimes a little earlier, sometimes a little later, but I'm committing to 7 p.m. Central Time here in Texas. So that's, 8 Eastern and 5 Pacific? Or I've totally messed up the math, but I think I did that one right.
Oh, is Pacific two hours difference from Central?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a mountain in there.
There is a mountain time zone. No, and if anyone is in the mountain time zone, I apologize, because you don't even get your own TV feed. But that would be 6 o'clock mountain time.
Gotcha.
So, again, when we've done this in the past, sometimes it's gone 2 hours, sometimes it's gone 6 or 7. There have been a couple of times where it's just like 2 in the morning, and it's like, I got to go to sleep now. but it's a lot of fun. What we've done in the past is kind of use previews as kind of a rough agenda, meaning we start at the beginning and work our way back. But digressions happen a lot. If you've got questions about current comics, creators, stuff like that, all I kind of ask is you don't spoil stuff for me, because, again, I'm a little behind on my reading. Not too far, only about 3 weeks. But, at that point, maybe I'll be caught up. Who knows? But just, be respectful that not everybody's got, oodles of time and hasn't been able to watch every movie, TV show, and read every book, comic, and whatnot out on the market, just because some people have lives. But yeah, that's the plan on the 2nd. Again, the week after would be when the clips are due. So hopefully people join in. Are you planning on showing for that?
Don't know. Depends. I don't know what my April 2nd looks like. That's a Saturday.
Yeah.
A lot of time that's date night. You'll get me in trouble.
We used to do it on Friday nights, and I've got standing plans with my sister to watch TV and stuff, so that caused me some anguish there, too.
There
so.
You go. You feel my pain.
Yeah, and I was getting – I can't do that this season. There's too much TV.
You can't get behind on TV, or your DVRs just fill up.
I am behind on TV. I haven't watched any of Agent season 2 of Agent Carter.
You got to catch up on Gotham.
I got to catch up on Gotham. I got to catch up
on Gotham.
On Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah, do Gotham. You can leave Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. alone.
haven't even finished the last season of Orphan Black. The next one's going to start.
Oh, yeah.
So at some point, my sister and I are going to try to find some time to just marathon through some stuff on the weekends. But, that eats into my comic book reading time. So it's all time management.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
If you didn't sleep, I think you would be able to get a lot more done.
You would think that. But even if I stay up late, there's just too much to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm trying to catch up on stuff. It's all good. There's just plenty to be entertained by, which is a nice problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that'll do it.
Cool. Drew and I will also be at C2E2 this coming weekend in Chicago. So if you're there, come by and say hi. I'm going to be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Drew's going to be there on Saturday. Drew and I are planning on meeting up. It'll be the first time we've met face-to-face. On Saturday, around 10 a.m. at the Marvel booth. That's subject to change. So if you've got any questions, check the forum, email me. I'm going to be a little offline the day or two before C2E2. But if you're in the area, certainly would love to meet you and chat with you. Join us next time as we discuss Batman Superman number 30 from DC, Amazing Spider-Man number 9 from Marvel, and Star Trek number 55 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.